right, on this week's episode of Magnify, we're joined by Mike Rorick. How's it going, Mike?
Going good. Thanks for having me.
So I like the guests to always introduce themselves because I feel like they do a better job than I would. So I'll give you a little, you know, 10, 30 seconds to kind of give us a little pitch about what you do, who you are, and we'll kind of get into the convo.
Yeah, my name is Mike Rorick. I've been in real estate since 2001. I started as an assistant, went solo within a year, became a principal broker. I've been director of sales, and now I'm a coach for different levels of agents, wherever they may be.
Awesome. I'm really looking forward to this conversation because I have about 15 years in the health and wellness space. So I'm really big on mindset, and I know that's something you really dive deep into. So, but let's rewind to the beginning. How did you get into real estate? And then kind of talk through some of your successes and maybe some lessons you learned along that journey.
So I think I fell into real estate the way a lot of other people did. They just kind of ended up there. I had gotten my degree in psychology, and my thought was I was going to be a counselor, a therapist, or something like that. But then I saw the path, and the path was not very clear. And I'd just gotten married, and a friend popped up and said, "Hey, look, we're going to start a real estate team, and we need an assistant." And I was like, you know, like everyone else, real estate sounds really interesting. So sure. I wasn't sure I wanted to go to master school and get that degree. So I was like, sure, I'll do that. And I was with them for almost a year. Things weren't going the way that I thought they were going to go. They weren't really my people that I thought they were. Uh-huh. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to go and do this on my own. And I was kind of lucky. I kind of think that everyone should start as an assistant, like in for the appraisal game. Everybody's has to be like for a year or so, they have to be an apprentice. The amount of reps that I had with doing CMAs, writing up contracts, all that stuff on the backside, I had so much confidence out of the gate, where a lot of people get into this like, okay, I'm a real estate agent. What do I do now? I had all the hard work figured out as far as what to do behind the scenes. So my first 6 months, I did $40,000 in commission. If today's money, that'd be like 120 for my market. Yeah. So I got lucky, and it wasn't necessarily the people I knew. There's just things I was doing that I learned for the previous gig. So the next year I got my own assistant, and I had 1 month where I closed 10 deals. So that foundation really helped me. One of the things that I didn't do is I went after everything like the golden rule. Treat everyone the way I wanted to be treated. The thing was, it kind of backfired in some ways in that not everyone's like me. And so I'm a slow decision maker. So I was giving everyone time. No, take some time to think about, which most agents hearing this, like, what are you talking about? I was like, yeah, think about it tonight. And then they would change their mind or whatever. But then I thought I was vindicated. It took me a while, even though I had the degree in psychology, even though I'm looking at all these things, as approaching things as if everybody was me. And I think that's a mistake we make as agents. Well, I'm going to market for things that I like. I'm going to go after this the way I think it should be done. So I had some successes, but I also had some things kind of hold me back of just not seeing that full picture.
Yeah. And how was it that you built your business? Because I mean, today's money, 120K for GCI is a very good kind of first year. What was the kind of business built on? What kind of marketing were you doing? You know, we had a bunch of open houses. What were the tactics?
So my thing was expireds back then. So this was 2002, and it was before the do not call list. So that's what the guys did before, and who I was working with. So that's what I saw and heard every day. So I just did what they did. Yeah. And so I got that. And then, our downtown area was kind of still small. We were the Portland area. I'm from the Portland area, and they were revitalizing that. So I put out this little ad in our weekly newspaper that we had, not the daily one, but just a side little cultural kind of one. And I said, there's 130 condos downtown for sale. I did something very basic. And what I didn't even realize was people just thought they were all my listings. So they thought that I had these listings. So they called me about these. And I had a lady who had, and this is a good lesson for agents. So she lived in Maryland. So she's on the other side of the country.
Okay.
She's working with an agent here, and the agent's like, found you the house. And so she flies out here. She's writing up the offer, and she goes, hey, I'm just double checking. I can have my two 80-pound Labradors in this condo complex. She's like, oh, no, no, they don't allow pets, but you're going to get these nice curtains. She's like, what are you talking about? I'm not giving up my dogs for... So she left and she's mad, but she picked up that newspaper that had my ad in it. So she called me and she said, hey, this is what I'm looking for. And I already knew she's looking downtown. These were some nice price points compared to what I'd dealt with. And she's like, I'm looking between $400,000 and $600,000. And this is what I'm looking for. So I went and went downtown. We had, you know, basic technology in 2002, but I was taking video, putting it on the website that my company offered me. And I was like, hey, here, I found two homes that were under 400,000. I know you said 400, but I found two under. Found one at 425. I think you're going to, it fits everything you said, but here's some other at 475, 525, and whatever. She's like, that's interesting. The other agent couldn't find me anything under 500.
Huh.
This is the game that some agents play. And this is that transactional versus relational kind of tactic. That agent lost a good client. And the 425 one is the one she bought, the one that I actually listened to her and what she wanted. So that was just a little side story. But I did some marketing in the newspaper as well, but expireds were the main thing for me.
Okay. And then principal broker, how was that transition? Because at that point, you're not selling real estate, right? You're just managing the office.
No, it was this boutique firm. There's like 12 agents. So I still did some of my other stuff. But that's where I really got into, because like I wanted to be the therapist and the counselor before. And that's the part of real estate that I really enjoyed, is helping these first-time home buyers and these people go through it. But then when I had an office and I was helping these agents who are, you know, they're learning or they're whatever they needed, that really fed my soul to help them with those things. So okay. That I had a friend who's like, hey, my wife is going to need to go do, you know, more time with the kids. So we need someone here. I don't want to be the principal broker. How about you? And I was like, yeah, let's give it a shot. I like learning. I like trying new things. And it fit me pretty well.
And then that kind of led into the coaching.
Well, the downturn of the Great Recession took us from 12 to 3.
Oh, okay.
So I went solo for a little while, and then I had this opportunity to become director of sales for a team that eventually was a $50 million team. And we almost got as big as the brokerage did with team members. Oh, wow. And I was having weekly meetings with the agents. I was helping these brand new agents come up and figure out the whole lay of the land, figure out what path works for them. And that's really where the coaching happened. And then we had the pandemic, and I was like, you know what? This is what kind of feeds my soul. I realized there was a lot more agents like me. I'm not the typical agent. Mm-hmm. I'm not that. If you know the DISC profile, if you've heard of that, there's the high Ds, they're the drivers and get things done, this kind of thing. And then there's the opposite, is that high S. They're that person who really wants to care about people and they'll give so much of themselves. And I realized there's a lot of people that were more of those caregivers. And they weren't getting the coaching and training that fit them. You know, the people are like, just do it. Why are you even, like this whole thing about mindset, some of those people with those higher D profiles, it's not about just do it. Like they can't even begin to understand why someone wouldn't just pick up the phone.
Yeah.
Whereas with me, it wasn't my profile to pick up a phone. What I had to do was kind of come up with this alter ego thing, which I didn't understand until recently in the last 5 years. But it's working with the mindset to go do the thing that's hard and to see another way on it. So like I said, what feeds my soul is helping people and seeing that aha moment. And I was like, you know what? This is where I'm going to go. This is what I'm going to want to do. I can coach people for like 16 hours a day, because at the end of it, I'm energized.
Yeah, that's awesome. You know, man after my own heart, you know, being in the fitness industry, Same deal. And even when I was an agent in real estate, that was it too. I was driven by helping people, and kind of similar to you, I was very, I wasn't pushy enough for, you know, kind of same thing you were saying. I was, you know, take your time, make a decision, but that doesn't really work in real estate, because I mean, you give someone an out, they'll take it. So talking about the coaching practice, how did that start out? Just because a lot of our listeners are real estate agents, but there's also a portion that are, you know, marketing agencies, web developers. So I'm always interested in the mindset behind starting a business, although real estate is a business too, you know, if you're a solopreneur. how did you grow that business? Was it more of an organic thing? And then I want to get into what the kind of the mindset traits you kind of coach.
Sure. So in 2019, I was like, you know, I keep telling my agents all the same things. And I have new agents coming on. And I was like, what if I started a podcast? What if I had a podcast where I can just point people to? Because I had also having people outside the team asking for stuff. So I was like, yeah. I just had a place for everything to be. So in 2019, I started a podcast. And it was, like I said, a lot of the stuff that I was going over and over. Then the pandemic happened. And I was like, well, what if I had a website where everything could be all the things I'm training people and teaching people and kind of have like a little course on there and just have it out there? Because the way that I see it is, I don't think there's a huge value. There is value, but my thing is the information's out there if you're willing to dig for it.
Yeah.
It's really about the implementation. And so I got tons of books. My profile is I like to learn and learn. And so I'm going to go learn the thing I want to go learn, but the implementation is where we have the trouble.
Yeah.
But I want at least to have the information out there for the people who just need that. So I put that out in 2020 over the spring. So now it's been 3 years.
Okay.
So I put that out there, and then we're going through the pandemic, wondering what real estate was going to look like, what's going to happen. And then it just came the time the team had adjusted. People had gone their own ways. And so I was just like, this is the time I'm going to do it. I'm still coaching the team. And then, it was just the right time for me.
Okay. So it was more of an organic growth.
Yeah.
In that respect. Okay.
Just trying to do more of what I really enjoyed. Because being director of sales for a team, there's also other things you're doing besides the coaching part. You have to do all these other things. And I was like, I really want to do more of the coaching.
Yeah. You know, there's a great expression I came across recently, of people being wantrepreneurs. So they spend a lot of time researching, looking into all these things, watching videos, watching podcasts like this, but never actually implementing or executing on the knowledge they've acquired. So right. I'm assuming that's kind of the biggest thing you see with agents, or is there some knowledge gaps that you have to kind of help them with when they first start working with you?
It's both. I mean, getting into real estate, nobody knows how hard it is until they get into it. And everyone's like, oh my gosh, this is so much harder. And there's this image that was going around Facebook recently. And it was, we don't do this because it's hard. We do this because we thought it was going to be easy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's almost every, like I interviewed probably over 100 people, maybe 200 people as director of sales.
Yeah.
And me and one of the co-owners would laugh because majority of people said, I just like houses. I like pretty homes. And we just always waited for that comment to come out of people's mouth because you think you know what it is. It's so much more than the houses. And real estate's going to reveal a lot of your weaknesses.
Oh, yeah.
There's what I usually say is kind of, it's like a wagon wheel. You've got all these different spokes that are different jobs, and you're likely only good at two. And you have to figure out how to shore up the other ones. So the knowledge gap is a big piece,
okay. But
then there's a mindset. That mindset is if they come in as the caregiver in that high S on the disc profile, then they're going to have trouble reaching out to people. They don't want to bother people. So they're trying to figure out how to market and whatever without that. And there are ways to do it, but there's still ways that you're going to have to talk to people. And it's one of the analogies that I use is actually a personal trainer. Mm-hmm. Is that you have to know what their vision is. If you know what their vision is, well, then you need to be pushing them towards their vision. If you're pushing, because what a lot of people are afraid of, I don't want to be pushy. I don't want to be that kind of agent.
Yeah.
Well, if you're helping them get to their goal, you're pushing them for what they want. The pushy agent is pushing for what they want. They want the $500,000 sale instead of the $425 sale that was better for the person. So if you went into personal trainer, and you said, well, I don't feel like doing push-ups today. You're not doing them any good if you don't have them do the push-ups, right? Yeah. So once I kind of give people that idea, that kind of helps them get past that fear of pushing a little bit more because it's all about them and that's what the caregiver does. I want to help you. So I'm going to help you help yourself. And so that's a big mindset thing for a lot of the agents. So yeah, it's both. It's mindset and knowledge, because there's a ton of knowledge. There's a million ways to succeed in real estate. It's just finding the ones that you're willing to do.
Yeah, I always tell agents that, you know, similar to what you were saying, that if you truly believe that you are the right agent to work with this person, then there's not really much you couldn't or shouldn't do to make sure you are that agent. I'm not saying do anything illegal or shady or you know, dishonest, but, you know, market however you need to market. So you are in front of them and you are the person that can lead them through this real estate transaction, because we all know what a nightmare that can be and how stressful it is. So what are some of the tactics or the tools that you give your clients that help them shift their mindset that way? Because as we say, it's all well and good us telling them, but they have to shift the mindset.
So the one that I came across, like I said, I didn't even realize I did it. There's a book called The Alter Ego Effect. Mm-hmm. And have you heard of it?
Not the book, but I'm familiar with the ideas, but I'd love to hear your take on it.
So he talks about people like Marilyn Monroe being two different people. Mm-hmm. Beyonce. Beyonce said that she never stepped on the stage. It was Sasha Fierce.
Yeah.
She invented that person to go up on stage for her, essentially. Bo Jackson, when he was in high school, he was very emotional as a football player. And the coach is like, if you don't get this under control, you're not going to make it. That weekend, he was watching Friday the 13th, I think it was. And he's like, that's it. I'm going to be Jason. And I was telling my friend, who's a huge Bo Jackson fan, this story. He's like, oh my gosh, I remember when he got onto the baseball field specifically, he was stone faced and he was out there. He just took away all of emotion. And so this idea of the alter ego effect is taking on that person you want to be, that, but there's this dissociative thing about it that you can tell that ego, that alter ego, what to do. They can be the person that you're trying to be. Kind of like you can give your kids and your dog medicine, but you're not good at taking the medicine because it tastes yucky or whatever. It's just something about just pulling apart. And what I did with the expired listings is I made a couple of calls for the guys when I was working for them as an assistant. And it was actually kind of easy. Then when I had to do it for myself, I felt like I was, you know, in high school, a freshman trying to call a girl, and I'd pick up the phone and hang it back up.
Yeah.
All of a sudden I got nervous. And I was like, what's going on? I've done this. Well, I'd changed the stakes in my head. And what I did is I said, look, if I don't help them, the bad agents that I know that are out there that are calling expireds are going to call them. If I don't do it, they're going to have a bad experience. People who don't care about them, people who are not trying to help them. So I took on this alter ego of the White Knight. I'm going to go save them. And I got super, super lucky to enforce this alter ego that on my seventh call, I got an 82-year-old woman named Betty. And I said, hey, this is Mike calling about expired listing. Are you, you know, interviewing for the job of selling your home? She goes, I didn't think anyone wanted to help me. And that fed right into that alter ego and who I was. Everyone was Betty after that.
Okay.
So that was a big one. And I didn't realize what I was doing. And what they found is almost every top tier athlete has that alter ego. Kobe Bryant with the Mamba mentality, primetime, Deion Sanders, that same thing. They become this other person. And so the clothes you put on helps become the ritual of who you are. The music you listen to, all these things to get you in that mindset. So that's one they really use for the high S's, those people who have trouble getting to that next level, is just see yourself as somebody else and build it and make it real.
Do you have everybody do a DISC profile before they work with you?
Not everyone, but a lot of people. It really does help. It helps them uncover who they are and helps me have a better angle on how to attack it. With most people, once I have a conversation, I have a decent idea of who they are.
You can probably figure out now, you've spoken to enough people. Are there any common traits with the people that come to you? Like, do they skew one way or the other?
I think I get a lot of, you mean as far as the DISC profile or something else?
Yeah, just in terms of, you know, the highly driven people versus the highly compassionate and empathetic. Is there one that kind of skews that way?
I think it's more of those higher S's, more of those caregivers who are like, because what's really sad is they are some of the best real estate agents.
Yeah.
but they're in their own way. And so it's sad is that we have great agents who are not succeeding, and it's not their fault necessarily. It's that they're good at this part, but they're not good at these other parts, the marketing, the negotiation, some of these other things. They are great at serving the people, but they're not good at going out and getting the client or some of those other things where that driven profile is just going to go and go and go and get them people and get things done and push through and whatever. And they're not always the best agent because it's if they've fallen into this transactional thing.
Yeah.
So it's and maybe that's my style is I'm going to draw more of those high S's because that's the content I'm putting out and all that. I think the high D's are going to figure it out and they're going to push through. And they're really just looking for someone to give them a direction.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, it's, but really who I want to help the most are those high S's because what they're getting is maybe some accountability. That's that, you know, Coach Knight throwing a chair. And I think like the whole shame for motivation is a dirty fuel. Sure.
Yeah.
You can shame someone into doing something, but long-term you're either destroying their ego and their confidence, or they're just going to pull away. And I think shame's one of those worst accountability things out there. But people do need accountability.
Yeah, for sure. And then how kind of deep do you go with the mindset stuff? Are you helping them with like meditation and routine setting and things like that? Or is it more of a broader stroke, so to speak?
No, we get in, like there's someone that I'm talking to right now. And what we're really working on is their sleep. Because their sleep is crap and everything else has fallen apart. And, you know, we want to change everything at once. And this is the danger of when someone, you know, hires a coach, like, I want to fix everything now.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, you don't get in shape in a day. You don't get everything figured out in a day. And there's the book Atomic Habits, which I'm guessing you've probably
got it right here on my desk. Yep.
Yeah. You got to start small. And what happens is usually I talk to someone and they're like, okay, I know I haven't been doing jack squat for the last 6 months, but what I'm going to do now that I'm talking to you is I'm going to do 100 calls, every something insane. I'm like, all right, we'll see you next week. Cause I don't want to dim their hopes, but the truth is you are not going to go from 0 to 60 in a second, but let's figure out what you can do and get the baseline and then go from there. And I've had, as far as like, I go into routines, I go into habits, I go into wherever I think they need to be. And, you know, I've had one person who through journaling figured out that he had OCD, true OCD, not the one we joke about in TV where you're just a little neat. He had true OCD that was a real problem and he didn't realize what it was until he got into the journaling. And then he went and got help. So it's going after whatever angle they think they're having trouble. And with him, it took a while because he was hiding some of the stuff from me, some of the behaviors, because he wasn't sure.
Yeah.
So the big thing I tell people is I'm like a doctor. You have to tell me what's going on. Otherwise I can't really help you. If we're just talking about, you know, making calls, but you really, really hate that and you're better off, you know, you're great on video, let's go do that. But it comes down to being consistent and all that. So everyone's different. And that's, I think, I don't have a specific program for everyone. It's just hitting what you need and trying to, my big thing is Roaring Agents is the name of my podcast, the website where I have all the things. And the idea is Roaring Agents to help you unleash your voice. Cause so many of these people, they're scared to put their voice out there.
Yeah.
And the other part is to discover your path. Those are basically the two things that I'm always trying to discuss with agents.
Yeah. You know, and as a health coach, what I have my clients do is I'll have them do like a time journal. So you hear about nutrition journals and things like that. But I think when people start auditing their time, they start realizing how inefficient they are with it. Is there anything that you see with your clients? I'm assuming you do something similar like that, that you can identify, look, you're wasting so much time doing X, Y, and Z when you should be reallocating that to this and you'll have more time to be less stressed, improve your sleep, that kind of thing. Is there anything that is consistent like that?
So we always talk about time blocking at some point in there. But are you familiar with the Eisenhower decision matrix?
No.
So imagine you got four boxes, two on top of each other. And then on the left-hand top quadrant is urgent and important.
Mm-hmm.
And the right top box is important, but not urgent. And then the bottom left one is, I'm is not important but urgent. And then the last one is not important and not urgent. And it's really auditing what are the things you're doing. Because you're right, you're talking about earlier, is sometimes we get so much into planning. I'm going to plan. And you just keep planning and nothing happens because you didn't have whatever. And then you go make another plan to make up for that plan. So it's really auditing those things can help you see where you're wasting time.
Yeah.
Now, sometimes they're not always honest with themselves of what's urgent and important. And so sometimes that has to, we talk through those things. But just that level of awareness, usually it's like, oh my God, I'm wasting so much time.
Yeah.
And another place that people waste time and they don't realize it is everyone around them knows they're a real estate agent. And they're like, hey, Bob, you've got free time. Can you go do this thing for me? Can you go do this? And all of a sudden they just contract what time they have for real estate.
Yeah.
Because they're helping this and they're taking more stuff around the house because other people are not treating it like you have a job. You have to remind people this is a job. And almost everyone says they want to make at least $100,000, right? In real estate. That's always the go-to is like, are these $100,000 habits you've got? Yeah. Running around this thing and that thing. You're trying to make more money probably than you have ever had at another job and you're going to work less. That's not probably how it's going to work.
Yeah. In terms of managing time, do you have recommendations for, you know, outsourcing certain activities to kind of free up time, anything like marketing or, you know, in the beginning stages, do you recommend agents kind of get their hands dirty with everything? And, you know, what are some of your recommendations for that, for how to manage their time and outsourcing stuff?
Yeah, that's a hard one because usually people come to me when things are tough.
Yeah.
They've been trying it, then trying it. And they usually come to me as like, I'm out of money. I have to get a deal. You know, they wait too long to ask for help. And while everyone should be outsourcing the things they're not good at, you should have I almost push everyone to a transaction coordinator at the very least, because the transaction coordinator only charges them if they close. And then is a small percentage to let go of so that you can go do more, do other things. Yeah. But yeah, almost no one's good at marketing themselves. Almost no one's good at the accounting, the tracking, all those other things. They should be doing that. But usually when they're talking to me, it's like, I need my life fixed and I don't have the other resources for it.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll say three. Any actionable practices that agents can like start doing now to improve their mindset and kind of get their head in the game as we're approaching the second half of the year?
One of my favorites that I talk about all the time are the small wins.
Yeah.
When I'm talking to agents, you know, they're talking about the deal that fell apart, the thing that happened negative. And when I say, well, you know, you did this thing that's good. And like, yeah, that's, I'm supposed to be doing that anyway. And they diminish it. Like, you know, just showing up the gym is actually a win if you have not been showing up at the gym, right?
Right.
If you do one rep, that's better than the zero you've been doing for the last 6 months. And so what I kind of do is I give them permission to track their small wins, because what happens, they've done these studies over and over. And if you lose $1,000 gambling, you need to win $2,000 to $4,000 to have the same emotional impact. Losses hurt us more than wins fill us. And so when you have a deal fall apart, man, and you've already spent the check mentally, you know, the day of close, it falls apart. Nothing is going to feel as good as that felt bad. Getting a new client will not equal that. So if you have the small win, hey, I made my calls today. I have done this. I've done this. I've done this. I've done, even if, and they're going to want to diminish it, but even the small things, it shows that you've been doing the work. And that will help you when you have the crisis of confidence that something's going sideways.
Yeah.
And they've shown this with studies with animals over and over. People who win will win more. People who lose will do the things that losing causes them to do. And with a mice study, they put them in, they taught them if they go through this tube, they'll get food. And then eventually they put two mice or rats on either end. Now it didn't become a bloody fight. They just push each other. And what they found was that the rodent that pushes them through, they become the winner. They will take over the area that has the heat lamp and they'll do some other behaviors. They'll win more often. The one that lost will lose more It'll have, and they'll actually fire different parts of their brains. But if they take a losing mouse and push it through, the other part of the brain starts firing and they take on the attributes of the winner. So you take this together and you start tracking your small wins and you see these wins, you're actually possibly changing your neurochemistry.
I love that. Yeah.
So that one's a big one for me.
Yeah. I mean, I practiced the small wins thing even just with myself, but I didn't realize that there was actually some neurochemistry that could be changed from that. I hadn't heard of that mice experiment. That's an interesting one.
And if you look at Elon Musk, he's looking at Mars. No one could go where he's gone if he wasn't looking at the small wins along the way. Right. Even the rockets exploding, he learned something from that. But if you're thinking, oh, the rocket exploded, why am I doing this? Whatever. And that's where most people would fail.
Yeah.
And seeing that this is just part of the journey, going, that's a win. And, you know, and he had the rocket that exploded recently. And I don't think he said anywhere that he's expecting it to explode. And then it did. He goes, well, I learned something. And this is, he changed the story. Those wins matter.
Yeah. And it's almost like reframing as what I practice too is, it's a lesson or an opportunity. It's not a mistake or a loss. You know, as long as you extract something out of it, then you won. You know,
absolutely.
Any advice for agents in terms of being able, I think speaking from the experience of the agents I know, they have a hard time setting boundaries both in their personal lives and with clients. Any advice on how to, because that's a mindset thing, right? It's, I guess, being able to have the conviction to say no, but any advice on that?
So, you know, and I'm sorry for your listeners who are not familiar with the DISC profile assessment and all that stuff, because I lean on that a lot. It is one of the core things about my coaching that we talk about. And then the high S, the big thing with them is that they don't have boundaries.
Yeah.
That's what leads them quite often to be the high S, where the high D has boundaries. So, you know, kind of think of a wheel. It's D, I, S, C, and the D and the S are opposites and the I and C are opposites. And where those, the D and the S are opposites is, I think, that piece of boundary. And where it comes down to is there's somewhere in your history where you're afraid of, you're either afraid of being rejected or you've learned that you give your value by taking care of others.
Yeah.
And what happens with those high S's is that there's a thing called obliger rebellion. They will give and give and give, and one day they snap. And most high S's that I talk to, they're like, oh my gosh, yes, that is me. These people just kept taking and taking and taking. Yeah. And no one sees it coming because the high S has no emotion facing the public. You do not know the hurricane that's going on in their brain.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking
about. You're like, taking it and taking it and taking it. And you know what? You're all dead to me. And then they feel so guilty about that afterwards. So with those boundaries is realizing, like in real estate, I think this is what kills a lot of careers, is that they take on the worry of everything going wrong in a transaction.
Yeah.
And for me, that was a problem for a while. And I finally had to go. And I think it was the recession that did that to me, because so many things were going wrong.
Right.
People were losing homes. They weren't listening to me. And I was like, they're adults. I had to just really remind they are adults. I'm the presidential advisor. They are the one making decisions. I'm not making the decisions. And I'm not also going to be right all the time. But things that go wrong, if they're my fault, I'll take the blame, but I need to be realistic. And so there's a few books out there. One's Boundary Boss. Then there's an older one. They're usually geared towards women because society kind of pushes them to not have, you know, good boundaries and be the, you know, quiet person, whatever. So a lot of them are geared towards them. But in general, it's knowing who you are, what you want, and that you're worth what you want. And that if someone is going to walk away from you because you have a standard, then they're not your person. And that can be really hard for people who've built up this kind of lack of boundaries.
That makes sense. On the topic of books, actually, I guess I'll get some recommendations. We mentioned Atomic Habits. Any others, maybe two or three books you'd recommend that, you know, kind of must read for agents getting in the right mindset?
From mindset. I'm looking at my book stack over here. My Own Worst Enemy might be one for some people who are having boundary issues or self-sabotage. that's something we haven't really talked about. I think self-sabotage is where you have an identity of yourself, but you're trying to get to that next level, but you don't really believe it. So you sabotage it to come back down. Okay. Like you're going to work out and then you get sick and like, you know, I can't make it today for today's workout. Or you go eat the stuff. And then it makes this weird little cycle where you're not doing what you want, but you know you could be here, but you don't really believe it.
Right.
People have this with a financial thermostat as well. Well, no one in my family's made more than X amount of dollars. So maybe I'm not supposed to make more than that. And so they give up or quit or whatever it is. Yeah. And I think my own worst enemy kind of talks about some of that stuff. Jab, jab, right hook.
I love that.
While book. Yeah. It's been a long time since I read the book, what's interesting is Gary Vaynerchuk says he wrote that for those, basically the high Ds, those people who are like, want to buy a house? Want to buy a house? Who wants to buy a house? And just asking anyone.
Yeah.
He wrote that to remind them, look, you have to give before you ask. You have to build up whatever. And he says, it's really interesting. The people who enjoyed it the most were more like the high S profiles who are scared to ask, who will just give and never ask and hope people will just come to them.
That's interesting.
So more about it kind of gives them permission or a blueprint of if I give enough, then I have the permission. I have the right to say, hey, by the way, buy a house with me.
Yeah. You know, his sister's an agent. I was actually in the same office as her for a little short period.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Yeah. And I can see how that book goes both ways because it is all about the giving. So it's trying to teach those people to actually stop thinking of themselves. But then I can see how, you know, the high S's would be like, I deserve to ask. So yeah. So that's a very good, very good book. I think we'll wrap up with this final question of, you know, you've been in the industry for a long time, 20 plus years, right?
Yeah.
So looking ahead 5 years, where do you see real estate changing? How can agents prepare for that? I mean, AI is going to be a big issue for a lot of agents, might take some work away from what they're doing, you know, the automations and things like that. How can agents get ready for it?
I think they need to use it. I think the only place that we're going to have, barring the lawsuit that's class action lawsuit with National Association of Realtors and everything.
Yeah.
Barring whatever that may do, I don't think there's going to be big changes except for AI. When I, you know, everyone was afraid of Zillow and actually the amount of FSBOs have gone down since Zillow started. There's so much money coming into real estate, but nothing has truly disrupted. Redfin was giving away half the buyer's commission. They thought that that was the angle. And then now they're bringing that back. They're like, we just wasted money. So they're rolling that back and getting rid of that in most markets. So most of the disruption that people think are going to happen, it's not going to change. This is still, I need to trust someone. And AI is going to not really affect the end consumer that much because they're still going to want, I need a human to tell me what's going on. Because it's only going to be a level above Google.
Right.
A Google search. But where it's going to help agents is writing better copy, which, like I said, most of us are not good writers. So you're going to have better writing there. In the appraisal industry, they're already really pushing towards an algorithm.
Yeah.
And in my market, I know we're low on appraisers and there's not a lot of people getting into it. And I think they're expecting to flip over to an algorithm-based thing. So that's going to be a big change. You're going to be fighting an algorithm if your values don't come in.
Yeah.
But I think it's still going to be, you know, belly to belly people facing business. Like LegalZoom did not destroy the law industry. And I don't think ChatGPT is going to steal that. So you just need to be doing the hard work that you need to be doing consistently if you want to make it.
Yeah.
I think there's going to be a lot less agents really soon. I think hope isn't a strategy. And there's a lot of people that are just kind of hoping that things will work out, that if they're around enough, there's 38% less deals in my market than there were last year. And we really haven't lost that many agents.
Yeah, so I think a lot of people get in when it's a good market, right? And it's, they'll know someone that wants to sell or buy, and then they get their commission, and then they think that they're on a roll, and then a year goes by, 2 years go by, they're not doing the work like you're saying, and then it kind of all falls apart from there. So where can people find you? This is a great conversation, and I do really recommend agents, you know, look for services like yours, because I think that can take them to the next level, whatever level they're at. So where can people find you? How can they interact with you?
So because my last name is hard for anyone to spell, my first real estate website was mikecandoit.com. So I've just turned that into the my coaching website now. So you can learn about my coaching on there, roaringagents.com, which is a play on my last name, Roarig. Mm-hmm. That's where I've got all the free content. I've just recently revamped kind of how the flow through that. So I've got a basic on how the disc works. I've got listing presentations. I've got tons of PDFs. Most people are like blown away when they see what's on there, especially newer agents, like, wow, this is amazing. So there's something for everyone, wherever you are. And then I'm on Instagram. I've got a podcast, roaringagents.com, or no, it's just Roaring Agents. I'm up to like 150 episodes.
So. Yeah. So I'll link to all of that in the show notes so people can find it easy. But yeah, man, this was great. Great conversation. Really pleased to have you on.
Yeah. Thank you. I appreciate it. This is, yeah. It's fun being on the other side. It's harder work than being the interviewer.
You think it's harder work being the interviewee or the interviewer?
Interviewee.
I find it the other way around, actually. I find it hard, really? Harder being the host, yeah, because I have another podcast. But yeah, that's interesting.
Well, we should switch this.
Yeah, I'd love that. All right, man, we'll speak soon.
Awesome. Thank you. Bye.